that is, all of us serve in pulpits where our members share with us in what the Rav used to call the human condition. And the human condition brings all sorts of different challenges to life. And part of serving all of our congregation means to serve every single person, men, women, and children. And there are families who have children with special needs. Children with special needs never had a place in the synagogue. Children with special needs were the ones who were kept home on Shabbos because there were no programs in shul for them. And parents with children who had special needs also had to stay home. In fact, parents who had children with special needs were parents who had special needs, and they sort of felt isolated and not a part of a community. And a group of parents in the Five Towns area came forward and, in a sense, respectfully but firmly, challenged the rabbis of the community and really mobilized the community to establish what eventually became known as Kulanu. There was already in New Jersey, in the Teaneck area, a program called Sinai. Sinai certainly was very, very helpful to Kulanu. But Sinai was essentially a school, a very, very special and outstanding school that serviced this population. Kulanu started as a synagogue-based organization, which was inclusionary, which provided opportunities for parents, everyone, to come to shul on Shabbos, and provided opportunities for everyone's children to participate with everyone else's children. It included everybody. There was real interaction. And from the Kulanu synagogue-based program, there evolved a whole series of weekday programs, afternoon programs, and now a school, the Kulanu Torah Academy. We have present this morning three people. One of the parents, who some of you may know because she also likes to be in touch with rabbis on behalf of the Orthodox Caucus. I'm blessed to have her in my congregation. And that's Mindy Rosengarten. Our friend and colleague, Rabbi David Liebtag, whose father-in-law, Rabbi Kurland, we were just masfid, actually yesterday. He was just nifter on Sunday. Monday? And Beth Raskin, who is the principal of Kulanu Torah Academy. Rabbi Liebtag is now the dean of the entire, for this coming year, of the entire Hafter educational system in the community, currently the principal of the middle school of Hafter. The Kulanu Torah Academy happens to be housed at Hafter, but it's a cross the community program. It's for kids from whose parents may be parents in any of the schools in the area. And so we have them here. Mindy will make a presentation. Rabbi Liebtag will make a short presentation. And Beth is here. And if people have questions, I think it's a very, very important and special opportunity for all of us to learn a little bit from the experience of people who've really made a change and made a difference for a lot of people. So first, Mrs. Mindy Rosengarten.
What happens when a child is born with a disability? Parents begin a grieving and acceptance process that is revisited at various stages during their child's life. Even when a parent thinks they finally accepted it, something will come up to trigger that pain and sadness, perhaps a birthday, bar mitzvah, or just noticing another child in the neighborhood, their child's age, which makes them realize what they are missing. The challenge before the parents is to let go of the dreams and hopes they have carried for their normal child and embrace a new reality. The problem is we are always crying out for our original dream of a complete Bayit Ne'eman b'Yisrael. Letting go is easier said than done. With a child with special needs, every task is more difficult. If you have a child that requires a wheelchair, getting in and out of the car takes that much longer. If your child is autistic and has no sense of danger, you must be vigilant every minute because he may unintentionally do something to harm himself or even kill himself. Stress is pulling your child out of the street because he noticed a wad of gum on the road and shot out unexpectedly into oncoming traffic to grab it. And I'm not talking about a 2-year-old, I'm talking about a 16-year-old. Stress is taking only 2 minutes to tuck your 6-month-old in his crib and returning to find your 3-year-old with hyperactivity hanging by his fingers from the second-story window ledge because he likes to climb. At some point, you recognize that you need to make some changes. You hire extra help, and you install locks on all your doors, windows, and cabinets. Well, stress is having locks on all your doors and cabinets, especially when you're struggling with the keys when your kid is faster than you are. And hiring help puts an added financial strain on you when you are barely able to pay for therapies as it is. Part of the nature of raising a child, or in some cases more than one child with special needs, involves balancing their needs with a lifestyle of Torah and mitzvot. I would like to spend a minute or two describing to you the stress involved in trying to take care of your child while maintaining your standards of frumkeit. How am I going to make Shabbos in the midst of running to doctors, therapists, filling out insurance forms, looking for schools, having sleepless nights, giving attention to my other children, wanting and possibly needing to take care of my parents and in-laws who are doubly suffering for their children and grandchild, let alone say hello to my spouse? How am I going to get out to the mikvah on the designated night when I have no time to take the required bath and no qualified babysitter to make sure my child is safe? What do I do when my son sobs deliriously on the 5th day of Pesach when I serve him yet another plate of matzah and cream cheese as he desperately seeks his familiar routine of toast or Cheerios? Do I bang on my neighbor's door and beg them for some bread? I'm not going to tell you what I did. What about getting inside shul to daven? I certainly have what to pray for, but my child cannot sit still or will grab a lollipop for another youngster, and it is so hard to watch all the normal families who look so put together and relaxed. This emotional turmoil leads to feelings of hopelessness and isolation, not to mention anger, shame, and guilt. If you keep your original goals of living your ideal life of mitzvot within the Jewish community, you're not going to make it. If you keep giving up your life's dreams and pleasures, you're not going to make it either. Often, well-intentioned people make what they think are helpful comments to struggling parents. People commonly say, "God only gives you what you can handle." With all due respect, I do not know one person who has been helped by hearing that phrase. When a person is suffering, struggling to make sense of things, and feels hopeless, hearing they should be able to handle it makes them feel more inadequate, misunderstood, and isolated emotionally. All that means to them is that they are failing. I am sure you have heard another line commonly meant to comfort parents: God put children with special needs on earth to give others an opportunity to do chesed. This is not something we want to hear. I am already jealous enough of those other families. I do not want to hear that my child and I are suffering for the sake of other luckier children, and I do not want to feel needy or pitied. This puts me further and further away from my dream of living normally. It only increases my sense of isolation. I believe that people who are suffering are not looking for an answer. They just want understanding. They need you to hear them out, validate their feelings of anguish, and just be there for them. They just don't want to feel alone. Worse than our personal grief is seeing our children in pain. For now, I'm not speaking about children with severe disabilities or medical issues. The Jewish community has not forsaken our more obviously disabled population. Thank God we have Ohel, Beis Ezra, Hask, Camp Simcha, and Yachad, to name a few, that provide much-needed services. But what about the child with less obvious issues that still exclude him or her from a yeshiva education? The child with social issues that just doesn't fit in at shul? The child with ADHD, Asperger's, or learning disabilities? Yes, there are a few yeshiva programs such as Petach and Kahal that cater to a very specific type of learning challenged child, the costs of which overwhelmingly fall on the parent's shoulders. And I hope that someday soon, this exorbitant financial burden will become a community responsibility so there will be equal Torah education for all children. The fact is, though, the majority of Jewish kids with special needs have no choice but to go to public or private special education schools, and that takes them out of the loop of the social fabric of Jewish society. Let's face it, kids socialize in yeshiva and at shul, so no one knows our kids. And so they are unintentionally left out of neighborhood birthday parties, Their special needs precludes their participation in shul youth groups. They're on vacation during Christmas and spring break. In short, for all sorts of logistical reasons, they are isolated, ignored, invisible. So, how can we help our children and ourselves? What can rabbis and the community say and do to support us in a way that is appropriate and sensitive? At one of my lowest points, I asked a rabbi, how many times can I plead, cry, and beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to heal my child? And it just doesn't happen. After years of davening and not getting what I desperately want, how do I not grow cold, angry, and turned off? His reply shifted everything for me. He simply said, maybe you should be asking for something else. It was like I was handed a new pair of glasses, a new avenue opened before me. Instead of praying for the miracle that just wasn't happening, I needed to daven for something else, perhaps the strength to accept and appreciate my child as he was created. It began to make sense to me that in God's divine wisdom, my child was born perfect, with exactly what he needed to fulfill his tafkid in his lifetime on earth. In embracing and accepting this, I was on a new path. With this in mind, the mothers in my community have developed an answer. We call it chinuch, not chesed, or I like to call it our win-win program. The solution to our struggling families is Kulanu. What Kulanu has done is to make our families feel valuable to the community. Yes, our children are needy, but they are needed as well. Kulanu is not a chesed organization to help the needy. It is a vehicle for chinuch. By including the disabled in the general community, in shuls, schools, and in town, the families of the child who is disabled do not have to feel abandoned, but more importantly, they now have a sense of purpose. It may just be that we are all put on earth with our unique strengths and weaknesses, not for the opportunity to do chesed, but for the purpose of learning from one another. If so, a child with disabilities provides chinuch by helping teach another child compassion, tolerance, and patience, while the typical child provides the disabled child with opportunities for friendship, love, and support. Everyone has to struggle with his or her own strengths and weaknesses. When I see a child who is at the bottom of his yeshiva class with low self-esteem come to Kulanu and help a more obviously disabled child throw and catch a ball, that to me is a win-win situation. When I see a kid who takes for granted all that he is blessed with take a child in a wheelchair around the bases and together they score a home run, that gives me strength. When I see the siblings of children with special needs feel like they are the experts at Kulanu, that is my comfort. It is within the community that I find my support. That's where I see the Tzelem Elokim in each one of us connecting. I am not alone. That is when I see the Shekhinah settling gently over our community. It can happen in your community too. Here's how. Kulanu simply includes children with disabilities in their own families, shuls, and yeshivot and makes them visible once again. All Kulanu programs are integrated. Our shul shadow program enables the disabled child to participate in junior congregation and youth programs by pairing high school students with them. They help the child integrate successfully into the group. Kulanu Talmud Torah is held in local yeshiva elementary schools, which gives the special ed student a chance to learn Yiddishkeit after public school lets out, but also provides the opportunity to mix and mingle with neighborhood yeshiva kids their age in the late afternoons. On Sundays, we have a recreation, art, music, gym, and woodshop program, which brings typical and disabled kids together on a weekly basis. Several times over the school year, during Christmas break and public school holidays such as St. Patrick's Day, children who do not attend yeshiva are invited into a yeshiva class. Their names are put on the class list for play dates and birthday parties and bar mitzvahs, and they become part of the Jewish community where they belong. Each child's special needs are determined, and they are given the necessary support to ensure their success. For example, our youngest child, Yigal, who due to his special needs attended public school through grade 5, was integrated into the Jewish community because of Kulanu. Invited into a yeshiva class of his peers during public school vacation days, the kids began to know him. This was reinforced weekly at junior congregation, where a high school student shadowed him, helped him with tefillah, and to socialize with these same kids. Slowly he was befriended, invited for Shabbos afternoon play dates and parties. This year, with the inauguration of Kulanu Torah Academy, a special education school within Hafter's Yeshiva Middle School, Yigal was not only readily welcomed by the kids in his class and the teachers, they rightfully celebrated in his huge achievement. This past September, as 13 Kulanu kids began their first day of yeshiva, kids ran over to give them high fives, and parents wiped tears and hugged in the hallways. It was a community achievement. On behalf of the parents in your kahilas, I would like to ask each of you to take out your Palm Pilots now, I mean it, don't mess with a mother, and make a note to set up a meeting in the coming weeks with three or four families who have a disabled child, your youth director, and a few lay leaders, and simply start an inclusive program in your shul. It's very easy. If you don't know any families with a disabled child, ask around or put a notice in your shul bulletin. Kulanu can be a resource to guide you. On your tables are cards with contact information in case you need guidance. Please use them. I would like you to consider working with your yeshiva principals and board members to invite, include, and enable all our children to be visible and valuable. And I guarantee you will witness a transformation in your community.
It's usually this time of the morning that I say to students, Boker Tov, Talmidim. And I'm saying Boker Tov to all of you because after listening to Mindy, I think all of us can learn much from her experiences, not just as a mother, but as a community leader, in terms of helping and including children of special needs. I want to just add my own particular insight and say Breshus, the Rabbanim and the Rosh Yeshiva that are here. I also want to just mention that Rabbi Billet mentioned that Mindy is a member of his synagogue. So am I. I don't know why he left that out, but trying to tell me something. But his to have an opportunity to work with a Rav like Rabbi Billet in terms of community planning and programming is a very special honor and a privilege. But I also believe it is a way that we as community leaders can actually effectuate significant change. I'm also honored to have another one of my former rabbis from a previous incarnation in St. Louis, Rabbi Jeff Bienenfeld, together. We were able to do amazing things for children with special needs and other children that may not have the same kind of special needs that Mindy was talking about. But the collaboration between rabbis in shuls and principals in schools, I believe, is a model that we need to just to talk about more, do more, and perhaps one day we can have a session just on that. Because I think together, the synergy that develops from that kind of relationship really transforms communities significantly. And in fact, I even brought a little handout, which you can just on the table there, about ideas that I think that principals and community rabbis can work together on to help transform again their communities. But I'm not going to give any divrei Torah to a group of rabbis in Rosh Yeshiva, but Ein Hamidrash Ikar LaMaaseh. I want to talk about LaMaaseh, about including Jewish children in our communities. I'm here to tell you that Mindy's ideas and ideas of other parents in the past are not just pipe dreams, but they're reality, because I can tell you that I've lived through it and experienced it. See, these children and these families, they don't need and want your sympathy. They want opportunity. They don't want your compassion. They want your connection. And they don't want to be secluded or seclusion. They want inclusion. Let me explain. It's very nice to be sympathetic and have rahmanas on these situations, but as Mindy, you know, articulated as only she can, it's not helpful. And in fact, I want to take an idea that I heard in terms of chinuch that Yaakov Kamenetsky once said regarding where to place a mezuzah, particularly for children in preschool. Because obviously the mezuzah is near the top of the door and then children can't reach it, so oftentimes they would put the mezuzah on a lower level so the children could reach it. Yaakov said that what you should do instead is you should put a little step so the child should climb up the step and reach the mezuzah. So we bring the child up to the level of the mitzvah, not bring the mitzvah down to the child. When you deal with children with special needs, they don't want to have a different set of rules. They don't want to be isolated. They don't want to be considered different. They just want to have an opportunity to climb up a step to do what everybody else does. And therefore, instead of giving sympathy, give them opportunities, show them ways find ways for them so they can participate with everyone else. It's beyond the scope of my 5 minutes this morning to tell you how we do that, but it's doable. And we've done it in the Kelowna Torah Academy that Mindy spoke briefly about. We talk about having compassion for them, but they want to be connected. They want to feel that they belong. I'm sure all of you, somewhere in your college studies, studied Maslow's theories of self-actualization. And it's an important thing that I want to bring up just briefly so you understand psychologically why this is so important to include kids. He basically says for a person to reach their potential, first they have to have all their physiological needs. After that, they have to have all their physical needs met. Then they have to feel a sense of belonging and love, and then they can begin to achieve, and then eventually they self-actualize. What happens too often, particularly with kids with special needs, they have to do something to achieve before they belong. It reverses Maslow's hierarchy. And therefore, it's impossible sometimes for these kids to ever feel they belong to any group because they never achieve high enough to be with anyone else. And so the approach that we take with children with special needs is to include them initially, that they don't have to qualify to belong. The fact that they exist, the fact they have the telemokim that Mindy spoke about, is all they need to participate. So it's very important to keep that in mind, that the belonging and love is necessary before any child can achieve. And I will tell you, in just 8 months since our program started, the achievement that these 13 boys and girls have amassed in a short period of time is just, we did not expect it at all. And the seclusion versus inclusion, oftentimes people say it's not realistic to include them, they can't participate, what are we possibly going to do? It's not true. The effect that including kids has on the attitudes of children is critical. When we included the Kelowna children in the KTA Academy 8 months ago, I never once mentioned to the students that these are special kids from this new program. Let's stand and give them a round of applause. Here they are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all the way to 13. We didn't say a word. Not one word was mentioned as to their label. And if we include them and consider them just like everyone else, the kids will do the same thing. They don't want to be isolated. And in fact, the more we isolate them, the more difficult it makes it for us to include them and make them part of the community. Let me just tell you three things that I think that we need to do as community leaders. First, and these three steps I believe were done with Kelowna Torah Academy and why it's so successful. Number one, it starts at the top. The responsibility is out there with every one of you in terms of a synagogue. It started with me in terms of a school. If I am not meshugala davar, if I'm not meshuga about this idea, it's not going to happen. And if you as the rabbi of your community are not crazy about including children with special needs, it's not going to happen. So it has to come from the top. And if rabbis want something, rabbis can get it, no matter what the issue is. But I think this is a number one issue that has to be on our agenda. Number two, in order for a inclusion program to happen in a school or a shul, you have to set up a climate that is conducive for that operation and for those children. And that can only happen with a certain amount of education. And again, we can help you with that. Mindy has left a card on your tables, how you can develop the climate in your synagogue, in your shul, in your school, so when these children do come in, they are accepted, not as special needs kids, but as kids. And finally, you need to have the infrastructure. You need to develop the balabatim, the lay and professional leadership to make it work. And you cannot, you should not assume or expect second best for these children. All of our children deserve first rate. We want to just give you two short insights and two short vignettes to give you some idea of the effect of inclusion has on a school. One of the problems all principals have is tefillah. Of course, all rabbis have the same problem in shuls. How do we enhance tefillah in our shuls? So, you know, we have our davening every morning, and we have a little bit of Karlbachian twist to some of our minyan. So when we do Chazar Sashat and Shachris and we get to V'li Yerushalayim Mircha, so the group sings V'li Yerushalayim Mircha, familiar, Karbach. Now when it comes to Mincha, we don't do a complete Chazar Sashat, we do a Hecha Kedusha. So therefore we don't repeat V'li Yerushalayim Mircha. One of the boys from Kulonu, every time in the silent Shemoneh Esrei that we see at Mincha, while everybody is quietly saying the Amidah, he sings out, and he's shaking his hand like this. Now, what would you expect a group of adolescent boys to do when they heard that? You'd snicker, they'd say, shh, keep quiet, what's going on? Not a word happens. Not one word. This has gone on for how many minchas? About 130 minchas now since school started. Every mincha, and initially when I was davening, because I davened with the kids, I was having a hard time concentrating. But after a while, I learned kavana from this boy. And the other kids learned kavana from this young man, who every day says Yerushalayim Ircha probably better than all of us combined in terms of his kavana. So that's a boy story. Let me give you a girl story. Especially in a middle school, I have 120, 130 bar mitzvahs a year. It's a lot of pieces of prime rib that I have to go through. But oftentimes there's a conflict because there's only how many Sundays or Shabbos are there to have bar mitzvahs if you take out the Yom Tovim and Sfira and the 3 weeks, 35, 40. So oftentimes there's a conflict of one or two bar mitzvahs or three sometimes on any given day. So one of our Kulanu girls, her name is Ruchi, had a bas mitzvah. And it was the same day that one of the other girls in the class had a bas mitzvah. So the girls decided they're going to go to both bas mitzvahs. So they first went to one of the typical students' bas mitzvahs, and then they went to Ruchi's bas mitzvah. On the way, one of the parents related the following conversation. So they left the one bas mitzvah and they went to the other bas mitzvah. And as they were going, the mother said to the five or six girls in the van, girls, this is such a wonderful chesed you're doing for Ruchi to go to her bas mitzvah. And they responded without waiting a moment, and they said, this was not a chesed. Ruchi is our friend. So in our school, I believe this was what Mindy was relating to before, we don't have a special chesed program, a chesed project of the week or the month. Or let's focus on doing something nice today. Or you have to have X number of chesed hours to qualify for a diploma. You even wonder whether you force kids to do chesed, whether it really is chesed. In our school, with the inclusion of kids like Ruchi, chesed is a way of life. And that's how it's supposed to be in Judaism. It's not supposed to be something you do for a few points. But that's a way of life. And it is a way of life. We just came back a week and a half ago from a trip to Washington. I took 130... boys and girls to Washington with five kids from Kulanu, and they were just like everybody else. They didn't like the food, they didn't like the museums, they loved playing around in the park, and they loved the boat rides. They were treated no different. Some of you may be old enough to remember a movie called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where some normal person was put into an insane asylum. What happened to him? We have seen an amazing change, transformation of these children in such a short period of time when they were with other kids. And the other kids treat them just like other kids. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be standing here to tell you about this, because I have a background in special education myself, and never did I believe that in such a short time we could accomplish so much. I want to tell you what the crystallizing moment was for me personally to really go to be meshugel ledover for children with special needs. It actually happened in St. Louis, with a family that Rabbi Bienenfeld knows well. I was approached about 10 or 12 years ago by a grandmother who had a grandchild, who was deaf. And St. Louis actually is noted for a special school for the deaf. They have a special chokhmah, how they can teach children to communicate. And she came into my office and she begged me to please take this deaf boy into my school. And she went on and she gave me all these reasons and how important it is, and she's giving me a Musa Shmus. And of course, I am quick to say yes to parents if they're desperate, if they want their children to learn Torah. So I said yes. But I said, tell me, why are you so meshugel ledover? Why are you so passionate about this? I realize it's your grandson, but I mean, you're asking me to do something that almost no one has done before, especially in an out-of-town school, to take a child who's deaf. And I knew about special education. So she said to me, I want to tell you a story. I used to tell my grandchild Bible stories from the Chumash. I taught him about Avraham. I taught him about Yitzchak and about Yaakov, about Masa Bereishit, about Yetziat Mitzrayim. And I told him one day this, I told my grandson this story when Moshe approached the burning bush. And I said to my grandson how Hashem spoke to Moshe at the burning bush, and I explained the whole discussion how it's going to lead to Yetziat Mitzrayim and so forth. After I closed the book and I paused, he started crying. He started wailing. He was uncontrollable, she said. I couldn't stop him. It took 10 or 15 minutes for him to calm down. Finally, when I got him calm, I asked him the question, why are you crying so much? What did I say that was so terrible? So these are the words that she told me. She said to me that he said to her, Bubby, I want to be able to hear Hashem also. And when I heard that story, that was the Makkah B'Patish to me, that I just couldn't sit back and allow this child not to have opportunity to participate in Torah. You know, we're during the period of time now during the Omer, and there are various different pshatim, how you explain Shalom Nagu Kavod Zebozeh. One of the ones that I like to teach to my students is that Shalom Nagu Zebozeh meant that at a certain level, people think that I'm so intelligent, I'm so smart, I'm so endowed with knowledge, I can't learn from someone that's below me.